It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 23rd day of March, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of Merry Wacky's any real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, the great low ground. And, well, if you should happen to pop in just right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers, Theo and Squeaky and Irish Dave and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Because, as he says, it's such a beautiful day there where he is out in Northern California. And he is capably assisted not far too far north in Oregon by Horn Chief Mathematician and Chief Agronomist and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. It is nominally Thorn in the Side Thursday. But since this is the last broadcast of the week, I thought we might do some front porch action here later on into the program. And because I hate to miss out on the group discussion that often turns out to be so informative and so much fun. And so we'll see if people want to go over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves and gather around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. It will be... Well, there will be one more Friday on the front porch in March. That is Friday, the 31st day of March. Once again, the same announcement applies. I will be gone tomorrow. I also will not be here on the 27th, the 28th, the 29th, and probably not the 30th, unless somehow or another I manage to drive hell-bent for leather from D.C., and get back here to the hills and hollers of almost level West by Coal Manchinistan by airtime. I'm not betting on it. It could happen, but I'll be here for Friday on the front porch, for certain. As noted previously, I'm headed up to New Jersey for the Princeton Environmental Film Festival, where we will screen Devil Put the Coal in the Ground, and I will be participating in a panel discussion after the screening of the film. It's at 10:30 on Sunday morning at the Princeton Public Library. I'm terribly, terribly excited to have been invited to participate in that. And then, for those of you who, we talked about this, Ralph's looked up the web address, and there is... on the Monday the 27th, you can actually view the documentary online for a small donation. And let me see if I can find that link again. There it is. The URL to watch it online is https://watch, just like wristwatch, watch.eventive, eventive.org/PEFF. Princeton Environmental Film Festival. PEFF. PEFF. And I promise you will not be disappointed. Whatever little donation you give to them will be well worth it. It is a profound piece of filmmaking. So there's been a lot of packing going on. It's a long list getting me out of here. And wow, am I glad I called the car rental company this morning. Because they were supposed to give me a call to confirm the rental and everything. Never heard from them. So I called them, and I said, I just wanted to verify. I've got a reservation for first thing in the morning. Oh, no, we have you coming in at 5 o'clock tomorrow evening. No! No! That was a mistake. I couldn't have been more clear. I need it as early as possible. Like the minute you open the doors. So hopefully that has been taken care of. Hopefully. So I'll pick that up, come back, pack the car, jump in. I've been playing with different routes, trying to decide whether I'm going to go down 64 and then up 81, or whether I'm going to go up 79 and across 68. In the long run, I think across 68 is probably my better choice, and then I'll pick up, I guess, 81 up to Harrisburg. And it won't be too long and miserable a drive. And I certainly know the first two legs of that, like the back of my hand. So that's the plan, fingers crossed. So anyway, again, no program Friday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I wish it was a vacation. It's not a vacation. Like every other time I hit the road, it's work. But it is work that is worth doing. I've been banging out emails to house offices, trying to get meetings for to advocate for support for the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. And no, nothing's going to happen in this Congress. Nothing is going to happen because this is a madhouse run by crazy people. That little teeny tiny Republican majority, including the Thedum carcass, who are presently holding the weaker speaker hostage. You know, it doesn't take but five of us. It doesn't take but one of us to move to remove you from the speakership. And there's over 200 Democrats who would probably vote with us, or not. That poor little dweeb, McCarthy, Kevers, the man of silly putty. Well, you know, I thought about it. I did, but I wasn't sure about the weather and, landing fees for the airstrip out at, I used to keep that in my head. Out from Paramus. Yeah, the in-laws. The ocean? It's over the ocean to Scranton, Pennsylvania? Yeah, we're making a little side trip. But Steve in New York said trip to D.C. and said, why not just take the horn jet? Steve, remember, we've been in a fundraising crisis for a while now. We had to sell the Gulfstream 5. We sold the Maybach. We concreted in the Olympic-sized pancreas-shaped swimming pool. Been hard times. Speaking of which, though, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. And so, consequently, we say thank you to our 23rd day of the month subscribers, partial sponsors of the program. And so that means thank you, to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, thank you. You are our only subscriber for the 23rd day of the month. And I'm so glad you're there. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you'd like to be a subscriber, it's real easy to do. Just go over to headon.live, click on the, and it's right there on the, and you just click the little, put into $10 or whatever, and put them, check the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. Boom, you're there. So where does that leave us in terms of fundraising? Fundraising? $1,080. $1,080 is the hole that we are in. Fortunately, we have a chance to knock some of that out this evening. Because we've got the continuation of the challenge from Ralphs, the Admiral Akbar, it's a trap challenge of $25. And a kind internet friend has also provided a have a show on me, which means if we can round up $150, if there are 15 people with $10, 10 people with $15, however it works out, if we can raise $150 this evening, a two-for-one tripling challenge will be triggered, and we will be $450 less than that $1,080. So we'd be down to $630, meaning $930 for Friday on the front porch, March the 31st, likely the first day back. Okay, can we do that? That would be wonderful. I would be so, well, it would make my life considerably simpler because I won't be worrying about stuff while I'm gone. There's no Friday on the front porch tomorrow, Steve, in New York, because I will be on the road. There will be a Friday on the front porch for the 31st day of March, because that'll be my first day back from New Jersey and D.C. So that's how that all plays out. It was beautiful today. The digital readout in the car said that out and about was 78 degrees, blue skies, high, just thin clouds. And so it was gorgeous. No jacket was involved. That was so nice. And naturally, the day that I'm going to be driving, however, well, it's gonna rain all day tomorrow. Isn't that a line from a Van Morrison song? It stoned me. Think it's gonna rain all day. Yeah, I think it's gonna rain all day tomorrow. Probably start later this evening. Gosh, I just love driving in the rain. I do. Not really. So made sure I've got an umbrella to go with, and got my pretty little trench coat. And I figured there wouldn't be a banner on the horn page for the porch, Roger, simply because it's kind of a let's see if anybody wants to do it kind of thing. I don't know. We'll find out. Because God knows there's no paucity of material today. And it being Thorn in the Side Thursday, let's just dive right in. If 14 minutes after the beginning of the program can be considered diving right in. We know where we are. Oh, I know. Steve in New York says, I'd urge you to take I-68. It's a really nice drive. I love it. I'm so old I can remember when it was U.S. Highway 48 before it got promoted to interstate status. Goes over through Deep Creek Lake and all of that. The part of Maryland that looks just like West Virginia, except it has better government. But no, what I was going to say is we know where we are. We know the America in which we live. We know the toxicity of the maggots and their various enablers and allies in the tax-exempt grift industry. But knowing where we are and what time it is doesn't make at least me any less driven to just sit and holler dirty words for a while when I see stories like this. Oh, and Steve from Georgistan, Soup, beat you to it. Ha! Steve from Georgistan says, please let folks know there will be a back porch tomorrow. It will start at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Signed, Steve from Georgistan, on the road to see the tax man. Soup! I sent Steve a picture earlier today. I just happened to be in the Swiftwater General Store, and I looked down there, and lo and behold, there was a can of Marie Callender's chicken pot pie soup. I immediately took a photograph of it and sent it to Steve with one word. Soup! Steve and Karen are still cackling about that. I think it's delightful. Yeah, a pot pie with no bottom crust is just soup. Throw a piece of toast on top of it or something. Soup. Remember Gene Wilder singing the soup song? As, what, the Mock Turtle in the 90s version of Alice in Wonderland? Soup. Yeah. Was he the Mock Turtle? It doesn't matter. First thing I thought of. Anyway, where we are, what we are, how we are. You knew it was coming sooner or later. But damn, it just stings. A principal, a high school principal in, of course, Florida, where they're protecting the children, has been sacked. The school is in Tallahassee. It's the Tallahassee Classical School. I'll bet they do stuff like teach Latin there and whatnot. Well, Hope Karaskia is no longer principal. Because at the Tallahassee Classical School, they study stuff like art. The great art of the Renaissance. You know where this is going. I know you know where this is going. I don't know how they classify it in Florida, but around here, middle school is 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade. Sometimes they do 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, whatever. But here we are. Yeah. Some 6th graders saw, and this just makes me feel like we're all screwed, Robin. Thank you, Scott, even though you're not here. Some 6th graders who attend the Tallahassee Classical School, which you've got to figure parents would have a clue. Well, no. Some 6th graders saw a photograph of quite possibly the single greatest work of sculpture in the entire history of the Renaissance. I'm talking, of course, about Michelangelo's David. And, you know, they saw his schmeckle. And this caused outrage, I tell you, outrage on the part of one parent of one sixth grader. It's such a fascinating piece of artwork. The beauty is breathtaking. And anybody who looks down at his teeny tiny little package, even for a statue that big, I think maybe that parent is missing the point of the art. Now, Principal Karaskia said she screwed up. Ordinarily, when they're going to be viewing Renaissance art, which has a lot of nakedness in it, because they weren't quite as... Well, they were waking up. They were waking up from the medieval era, and they were waking up from the toxic piety of Holy Mother Church. And they were celebrating the human form. And no single piece of art does more of that than the David. According to Principal Karaskia, one parent was point-blank upset because she did mess up, because she didn't send out the usual note. There was just an administrative mix-up. She didn't send out the usual note that said, "Your child will be looking at some of the greatest examples of Renaissance art. Some of those pieces of art involve nudity. If you do not wish your child to see this, let me know, and we will single your child out and not let them see the artwork so that they can feel alienated from the rest of their classmates." One student's weird parent. One. And so less than a year after they gave Principal Karaskia her job, the board of the, oh dear, charter school decided this past Monday that they wanted to fire her. The school opened in 2020, the Tallahassee Classical School did, and has been through three principals in as many years. Hope Karaskia is being pretty mature about it. She said, "I've taught in classical education for a decade. And once in a while, you get a parent who gets upset about Renaissance art. And that's why we sent out the letter." She said she wasn't surprised that the board chair, some dude named Barney Bishop. How does Barney Bishop become board chair of the Tallahassee Classical School? Nip it! Nip it in the bud! But she did not expect the other members of the board to go mouth-walking and knuckle-breathing all along behind him. The Tallahassee Democrat, the local newspaper there, interviewed Barney Bishop, who said, "Parental rights are supreme, and that means protecting the interests of all parents, whether it's 1, 20, or 50. But the problem with that kind of thinking is that when one parent's rights are supreme, that means the other parents who actually want their children to get a decent classical education don't. How do you display a photo or a PowerPoint slide or whatever. How do you display one of those of the David? Do you put a, I don't know, a siren over his junk? And doesn't that just make the little scholars all the more... I'm sure there's a move afoot to close the Tallahassee Classical School because, it's a charter school, and they focus on what they call classical learning, focusing on traditional Western liberal arts, read white, and they want to teach kids to think critically. So-called classical learning is also apparently big in the homeschooling community, you know, where they learn how Hannibal used elephants to march across the Rockies and save Lewis and Clark. I'm not terribly upset, though, because this charter school is actually a wholly owned subsidiary of a noxious outfit called Hillsdale College. This is a case of their own toxic philosophies turning around to bite them on the ass. Hillsdale College is a virulently right-wing school, and they have an entire network of such schools as this. And when they're out there hustling and fundraising for it, they say things like, we're going to fight leftist distorted teaching of American history, such as the lessons about slavery contained in the New York Times 1619 project.
Hey.
Yeah. Because, well, we can't be teaching the little classical scholars about slavery. Maybe you can teach them about slavery in ancient Rome. But not the American variety. The chattel variety. The funniest thing about all of this, though, despite the fact that this one outraged, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian Republican called the David pornographic. Pornographic. You know, these are the kinds of Christians who would be right at home with the Taliban and would have eagerly pushed down the plunger when those assholes blew up the Buddhas at Bamiyan in Afghanistan. I'm still pissed about it. But no, the thing is, pornographic? Michelangelo carved the David early on in the 16th century. Curiously, you know who commissioned him to do it? Yeah? A cathedral in Italy. Likely in the greater Florence area because he's not terribly transportable. I remember being there oh so many years ago. 45 to be precise. Still haven't gotten back. I threw my 3 coins in the Trevi Fountain. I still have not gotten back, and I'm not demanding a refund. But it was for a cathedral. David, naked as a jaybird. I don't know where we got that phrase. Don't ask. And it wasn't pornographic. Well, them was Catholics, you got to understand. Them ain't Christians. So now it's at the Galleria dell'Accademia. academia. Never know where to put the emphasis on which syllable. But it's a museum. But there's a reproduction that stands on a bluff over the, is it the Arno River? Overlooking the entire city of Florence, the bell tower, the baptistry, all that. To say something like parental rights are supreme, yeah, I don't know. Is Ron Monkey up to Clantis going to send him a cookie for that? Because that's one of those right-wing maggot talking points. Parental rights! You know, unless you're the parent of a kid that maggots don't like. You know who I'm talking about. The old gay kids, the old trans kids. Oh, well. At least they haven't made it to Florence. But it's so fascinating because you walk into this gallery, and the David stands down at the far end in a kind of a nave, and he's huge. He's like 18 feet high, and he looks perfectly proportioned at a distance. You get up close and you realize his hands are really huge. But then again, the outraged parents weren't looking at his hands. Oh, well. Don't worry, Stephen George's Dan. Steve, call me if you wind up in the pokey, and I'll spring you. I always have to go there, right? You never know. Cover your bases. I have no intention of engaging in any protests whatsoever because I don't want to wind up in the D.C. jail and get a visit from, because she's gonna, from the dipshit twins, Lauren Bobblehead Boobert, Clanny Oakley, and Marginal Trailer Queen, who may, I don't know, try to smuggle a Jewish space laser into the political prisoners in a birthday cake. Somebody's birthday somewhere. I saw the Michelangelo story. You can almost imagine his tired old bones wherever they are going, Dio mio. And I thought Julius II was a pain in the ass. You know, Ron Monkey up DeClantis is of Italian heritage. Wonder if he thinks the David's dirty. Straight up pornographic. I'm resisting so many inclinations right now. And I want you to be proud of me for resisting them, okay? Please? Things I desperately want to say, but won't. That's called self-censorship, by the way. Oh, no. No, that's a connection I didn't make. Christopher in Oregon with a question. Mm-hmm. Robin, going back to yesterday's show, my question is, if some Italian Yahoo shot off David Schmeckle, would you be able to bring it to the Good Reverend's Gospel Shop in Missouri, mentioned yesterday, so it could be anointed and grow back? Sky Spook Daddy works in mysterious ways. Oh, Christopher. You get the first cowbell for that. I don't know if God works in stone. Then again, well, don't go there. It's not Wednesday. Ralph said, maybe put a loincloth over the David. I'm thinking of a smiley face. That's usually what you get. Stephen, New York, says, David, you know, I hadn't looked at this in a very long time. It's breathtaking. It really is. My God, look at the close-up of the face. You can almost look at it and expect it to speak. Yes. And his eyes look at you. Wait till they see the Sistine ceiling. No, I guess that's banned at the Tallahassee Classical School, too. And Catholics. I know. Kay is with us this evening. Sigh. You can't show art now, too? Jesus, what's next? Don't ask. And Kay, Roger then followed. Yeah, it's affiliated with Hillsdale College, right-wing Christian institutions sought to fight leftist academics. Hillsdale College is about as right-wing a school as you can get. And yes, it's a charter school. And interesting, I mean, there's a nexus here because there is a small private liberal arts college in Florida in the greater Tampa St. Pete area. And it's that little liberal arts college that Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis just pulled a purge on their board of trustees and replaced it with a bunch of the aforementioned mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks, including a board member from Hillsdale College. College of Florida, something, something. And by the way, in so doing, has apparently cost that college some $27 million in donor monies. Oh, well played, George. Yes, indeed. It's cowbell number two. Stay classy, Tallahassee. That's very good, George. Kay pointing out, Barney Bishop, you couldn't make up a more perfect name for a Florida chair of the school system under DeKlantis' reign of terror. But, on the other hand, since they're a knockoff of a straight-up Christian Nazism, if they get shut down, that might actually be a benefit. Funny thing is, I don't know why you have to have a charter school to teach so-called classical Western liberal education. Liberals! I know. That's the really, you know, growing up in Alabama, I had one of those. I had math that I hated. You know, the classics, the algebra and the geometry. I had art, theater. Never took dance because of the aforementioned index toes from yesterday. Claire informed me that she, too, has a longer index toe than her big toe, but it doesn't slow her down, and she dances joyously through life. And I'm glad you do, Claire. Let's see. 3 years of Latin, 2 years of French, 1 year of German. We almost got taught Russian in that little high school in northwest Alabama because my first Latin teacher had taken a job with the CIA and was going to go and be an Arabic language specialist. She found out she didn't much care for that. And eventually came back, but in the interim we were taught by another fantastic Latin scholar, who also happened to be a Russian scholar, and was such a Russian scholar that she had taught English. You remember back in the way back, some of you won't, but once upon a time there was, and it was even during the Cold War, there was an Apollo-Soyuz joint mission, you know, to prove that we could get along. And so some American astronauts were sent somewhere into Mother Muscovy, and the Russian cosmonauts were sent to Houston. Not sure who got the short end of the stick on that deal. But my teacher, who taught me Latin, was actually hired to teach English to the cosmonauts because she could speak she could speak the Russian just as good as Tolstoy. And we got that close, and I was all ready to sign up to learn at least a year of Russian, but no, the fine, upstanding Christian community of Florence, Alabama, put the kibosh on that because they didn't want none of their precious Christian children learning none of that atheist commie language. I wish I was kidding. I am not. Bit of a digression. And Kay says, you hate math? Gee, Robin, I thought you were one of the good ones. Okay, it's not that I hate it. If it's the only thing I have to study, I could probably have gotten my head around it. Got an A+ in Algebra 2 when I took it by itself in summer school, and it was all I had to think about. But during the bulk of the school year, please. I had plays to do and poems to write and football to suck at. And so it never... And look, I'm of a certain age. Never put algebra after lunch, because that's when all the stoners go out behind the field house and get high. I remember next to nothing of Algebra 2 or Unified Geometry. Because I was blazed. You try going to high school in the late 70s in a school that's run by a principal, that's run by a community, that's run by the Church of Christ. You try. I was a Southern Baptist, and we were the wild-eyed liberals in that community. At least there'll be a record of some of this stuff. So, yeah, I was all smoked up. Now, I don't mind saying that. It was the late 70s. Now, Steve in New York said, you hate math? I think Kay needs to understand that you don't hate math. In fact, and this is probably true, Steve, and this would be our third cowbell of the evening. In fact, math hates you. It does. All those goddamned X's and Y's and... But I actually eventually got pretty good at the whole quadratic equation thing. Because that summer school class was taught by a coach. He was a baseball coach. Pretty decent guy. And he was actually kind of fun about it. And maybe it's because baseball involves, like, pine tar rags and spitballs and stuff. Dude ate chalk. I reckon he's probably no longer with us, but I liked him. He did. He ate chalk. Get his hands all covered. You know, the whole board be covered with a bunch of mathematical stuff. And hands would be covered in chalk. And he'd just set the chalk down. Lick his fingers and... The things you remember. The Apollo Soyuz mission, Theo, with a little bit of fill in the blanks. It was the mission in which Deke Slayton commanded after bitterly fighting with NASA after being grounded for an inconsequential heart murmur. The then Soviet commander was, I think, Alexei Leonov, the first ever spacewalker. I recall pictures with ridiculous numbers of audio and video cables, but pilots are pilots, and the guys got along very well. Yeah, they did. It kind of proved that we didn't necessarily have to nuke the living bejesus out of each other, even if a greasy-headed old B-movie actor who frequently got upstaged by a chimpanzee was in the White House and doing things like saying,
I have declared.
No, that's nearly Trump.
Well, Mommy, I've declared the Soviet Union illegal. The missiles fly in 5 minutes.
On an open mic! Young people, I'm not making that up. It happened. And I was young then. And it was like, please don't fuck my planet before I get to have a little more fun. You know, the real kind? Little did I know that they were busily fucking my planet anyway. Ronald Reagan took office on January the 20th, 1981, scant months before I would graduate. And I don't even know if I knew back then that he had pulled the solar panels off the White House. I do remember that that one of his first acts was taxing a server's tips in a restaurant. Great guy. So I've got some thank yous to send out. We are started on the challenges out there. Thank you so much. Thank you so much indeed, Vicky. Vicky says, greetings from Florida, kicking in on the challenge. Thank you, Vicky. Well, you knocked out Ralph's It's a Trap Admiral Akbar challenge, so that's met. And then Libby started in on the tripling challenge. And so there's $125 to go on that. Thank you both so very much. Because this is kind of a... I freak out when I leave here, you know. And, right. As to the Sistine Chapel... Yeah, Steve says, you thought the same thing I did. On another note, I recalled that in the creationism story part of the painting, there was some nudity, and yes, I was right. In fact, I think this is Adam in the buff. It is Adam. And, well, he looks a little like David, honestly. Then I don't think it's because they're both Jewish. I think Michelangelo had a type. Not saying. Just saying. No, curiously, that's the thing about both the David and the Adam from... David from the statue and Adam from the Sistine ceiling. Well, maybe you could make a case for Adam. But there's something present on the David that isn't supposed to be there. You know, covenants and all of that. Oh, no. Hillsdale College and High School. Guess who's chairman of the board of Hillsdale College? Here's your hint. Wheel of Fortune. By the way, John says in southern Minnesota... Your high school experience sounded like mine, minus the classical education. Do you mean the part that was out behind the field house during the lunch break? Yeah. I think that was a lot of America back about that time. Of course, now we're so obsessed about it all that I probably would not have made it out of high school without winding up in some alternative school-to-prison pipeline, some kind of thing. Vanna White? Well, it's got to be one or the other, doesn't it? Oh, Robin, move along. In January 6th, 2021, Riley Williams is off to prison. She got a 3-year sentence today. She was the one who led the murder-minded mob to the office of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, and she's going to be doing 3 years federal time. She went down on 2 felony charges: interfering with law enforcement officers during a civil disorder and resisting or impeding law enforcement officers. And then she also went down on 4 misdemeanor charges, all of which amounted to her only doing 3 years. Now let's just think about that for a second, please. What was the intent? What was Riley Williams' intent in leading that bloody-handed gang of punks, thugs, hard cases, and dead-enders and maggots, but I repeat myself, to Nancy Pelosi's office? Hint, to find Nancy Pelosi. Second hint, to kill Nancy Pelosi. 3 years. She was caught on video directing crowds up a staircase to her office, to Nancy Pelosi's office. She snatched Nancy Pelosi's laptop and hard drive, bragged about it on social media, saying, "Stormed into the Capitol building and stole Nancy Pelosi's hard drive and gavel." The jury deadlocked on whether or not to charge her for aiding and abetting the theft of the laptop. Her pettifogger, a federal public defender by the name of Lori Ulrich, said that Riley Williams just wanted to be somebody. I wanted to be somebody. The new phone book's here. The new phone book's here. Look, everybody, I'm somebody. And Lori Ulrich, the federal pettifogger, tried to make the court think that she was just a naive young girl of 22. You know, their brains aren't done developing until they're 26. Pleading before the court, she said, "I was a young and stupid girl addicted to the internet. And I became a devoted follower of Nick Fuentes." Oh, fuck me dead. Ah! Nick Fuentes. You know, the Mexican Nazi. The guy who says that it's gay for guys to have sex with women. To the credit of the DOJ, they were looking to put Riley away for 7 years. But the federal judge said no, 3 will be plenty. And I'm pretty sure, and I worry about her for this reason. I know I shouldn't. She's a fucking maggot. Goddamn terrorist. But she's like me. God damn it! But you know what? Credit to United Press International for not even mentioning that. Maybe I shouldn't either. But she is both literally and figuratively screwed if the Bureau of Prisons decides to put her in a men's facility. I'm guessing under the Biden administration, that may not happen. I just want to double check. Yeah, by the way, she was also seen in videos giving the Sieg Heil Nazi salute. She is from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, by the way. This is the one who got to... who talked the judge into letting her attend a Renaissance fair. And that was after the judge said she could only leave home for work. She was on home confinement. According to an article in Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Riley Williams was given leave to attend the fairies and fantasy-themed Renaissance Fair for 8 hours. According to NPR, that weekend might have meant potentially partaking in some corseted cosplay, making preparations for a make-believe Renaissance wedding, or enjoying a good old-fashioned jousting competition. Makes me want to eat dirt and run rabbits and drink a... Never mind. I hope I didn't just do something bad, but, you know, when a member... Well, I don't know if we get to, like, pull a reunion card or it, what, but there we are. Hey, thank you, George. George just got us down to 125. No, 150. 75. $75 to go in the 150 gets 150 gets 450 challenge from our kind internet friend. Thank you, George. $75. That sounds doable. Do better, Riley. You got a break. But I've got a little bit more fun to get into. You know, the thing about the maggots. Wait, what? Fun fact about Mechanicsburg, PA, from whence Riley June Williams hails. Mechanicsburg was named after a settlement of mechanics who made and repaired Conestoga wagons in the early 19th century. Further fun fact, Conestoga is the full word from which we get the euphemism for a cigar, stogie. And now you know. Now, what I was going to say is the maggots wanted power, you know, mainly, I think, to bark and, for purposes of barking and grunting about Hunter Biden. But along the way, being the majority carries an obligation to, well, govern. It's something they have proven that they are not terribly adept at doing. So they had a hearing today. These things all devolve into messes. Pat Fallon is a committee chair. and a maggot. He's from Texas. And he got all het up today because his hearing on the weaponization of government, that fraud, got shouted at by someone on his own side. He was talking about the weaponization of government, and there was some woman in the room who wanted to bark and grunt and bray about the Second Amendment.
And also, every single firearm in Mexico is supposed to be registered. Mexico has 124 million people. Ma'am?
Okay.
All right.
Off she goes.
Please remove that woman, please.
Yes, officer, please.
You're removed. You're breaching protocol and disordering the committee room.
He never took anyone away.
No. Officer, please remove her. And remove the gentleman, too. And I'm going to read a statement for the other folks in attendance. The committee...
Now before he does some reading for us to show off his fine reading skills, it should be noted this woman was barking and braying about guns. But she wasn't barking and braying about guns from our side of the... Or maybe she was. You took my son away from me. Which is, you know, Republicans who refuse to do anything about guns. That's what I thought I heard her say. You took my son away from me.
I didn't take anybody away.
Well, your silence is your acceptance, maggot.
He welcomes the public to this meeting. We have people on both sides of the aisle. We have people on both sides of the aisle that not only up here but in the audience that have differing opinions. While you are welcome here, I want...
Differing. Pat Fallon is a practitioner of the art of word knowing. Differing.
I want to point out to the members and to the audience in attendance today, House Rule 11 provides that the chairman of the committee may punish breaches of order and decorum by censure and exclusion from the hearing. All participants will be required to avoid unruly behavior and inappropriate language. Expressions of support or opposition are not in order. I expect all parties to these proceedings to conduct themselves at all times in a manner that reflects credibility on the House of Representatives. Okay. Now I'm going to reclaim my time. I'm pretty emotional as well. I think some people are, and we should be, because it's my firm belief that if you look at Mexico with 124 million people, the murder rate in this country is 5 per 100,000. Mexico, with very strong, strict gun laws, the murder rate is 29 per 100,000.
Point of order, dipshit. That's because of the cartel killings. And Mexico has cartels because, well, the United States. And the cartels have lots of guns because guns are easily obtained in the United States. And most of those guns that are used in most of those killings are not registered per Mexican federal law. God, these people are dumb. Jeebus. Well, it got so bad because they kept protesting that even though he tried to lecture on the sacredness of the Second Amendment, and apparently these were, contrary to what I said earlier, these were people protesting slaughters in this country. And he said, see, this is exactly what we have to avoid, which is some minority of folks trying to silence dissent. What's curious, though, is that the majority of the American people want to do something about our firearms plague. And clowns like Pat Fallon, a distinct minority, are trying to silence dissent. He was actually describing himself. Now, yes, Ralph's differing. I think you spelled it. That would be D-I-F-F-E-R-N-I-N-G, differing. I guess. But then he got pissy about it. We'll take a little bit more of this.
That is remarkably higher. So how can that be? If laws can wash away, unfortunately, human nature, they can. And evil is evil. Whether someone is murdered with a gun, with a knife, with a car,
with an assegai,
a bomb, or even with your bare hands, the fact of the matter is, what a firearm does is equalizing the playing field, particularly for elderly.
What? Firearms level the playing, equalize the playing field for the elderly? Oh, Margaret.
And for women. For folks that may not have the physical strength to defend themselves.
Oh, yeah, okay, Pat. You mean like the rocket scientist in Idaho from some years past who was shopping with her toddler in Wally World? A rocket scientist she was. When her toddler reached into her purse, pulled out her Freedom Protector, and blew her rocket scientist mama away. Her rocket scientist mama, who was a very, very vocal supporter of the Second Amendment, by the way. Or maybe he's talking about the woman who was otherwise physically unable to defend herself, who got a brand new holster bra for Christmas and went to try it out and shot herself through the heart in the attempt. Yeah, those women. Or the woman who in Florida was packing heat in her purse and meeting her girlfriend at Starbucks, maybe, a coffee shop of some sort, and well, the bag tumbled off onto the floor. I've seen it. It's happened to me. Got too much crap in my purse, and it's poorly balanced and right off the table. Well, it happened to her, too, only the gun just went off, oops, blam, pray, and she shot her bestie in the leg. Defenseless women.
So when we recall apologists for gun violence, we're using this for political tools, insurrectionists, and we're out of step.
Oh, him butt hurt.
This is about the democratic process. We are supposed to pass laws. Congress, not unelected bureaucrats. If that's the case, we can all just go home. I'd rather spend more time with my family, quite frankly.
Then do. Let somebody who actually wants to govern never mind.
My 13 and 16-year-old sons. I want to keep them safer. I want to keep everybody in this room safer. And I find it very hypocritical that some members of Congress hire armed security to protect themselves with firearms. So firearms are okay if they protect them, but not other people. The great masses.
Well, you know, some members of Congress have been threatened by Republican members of Congress who may or may not, now that the magnetometers are gone, have an arsenal in their offices and go off at a moment's notice.
Alcohol-related deaths in 2020, 13.1 per 100,000. We talking about regulating any more alcohol? We talking about banning it? We're talking about...
Well, you know, nobody under 21 can buy it there, Pat. I don't think that's your strongest argument, buddy. But you come from a state where an 18-year-old, you know, going back to laws that were passed in Texas, right about the time of the Civil War, so that young, less than 18-year-old white boys could... Well, you get my point.
Making new rules to make it harder to get alcohol? No. Deaths by car, vehicles, 38,824, 11.2 per 100,000.
Anybody care to guess who brought him all of these statistics? For a hint, there's a big mirrored glass cube of a building out in, I think it's maybe Fairfax, Virginia? And right across the top of the building, in blood red letters, appropriately, NRA. The most powerful, well-funded domestic terror organization in the history of the United States of America.
Anybody want to ban cars? Any talk of that? No. Mass shootings. One.
Oh, this guy's a super genius.
Is too many. In November 2021, in Wisconsin, a driver drove his SUV through a Christmas parade and he killed six. Was there any talk of banning cars? No. We weren't going to ban the Ford Escape he used or any like him. The Ford Super Duty pickup truck in October of 2017 in Manhattan.
That's two.
Drove his truck along a bike path and crashed into a school bus.
Tell me when it gets to the same number of people murdered in firearms deaths. Yeah, we can wait.
Killing eight. There was no talk of that. It's not the gun that kills people.
Oh, he
it's
is a steel trap,
the trigger.
Isn't he?
A gun is merely a tool. So you have a stabilizing brace.
You know, a tool, just like Pat Fallon. A tool. And all of this hissifying is about stabilizing braces. Marginal Trailer Queen recently tweeted that because there's going to be regulation of stabilizing braces, that boating deaths will go through the roof in the United States. Okay.
Mr. Moscow. See, this is exactly what we have to avoid.
Maybe have them shot, Pat. You're so gun crazy. But they're not going to give him a moment's peace.
Some minority of folks trying to silence dissent. Dissent shouldn't be kryptonite. We should have a civil conversation. We should have a spirited exchange of ideas.
And then he should win. Again, because the National Rifle Association is the most well-funded, powerful domestic terror organization in the history of the United States.
Raskin and I do, and I really respect it because he's good and he firmly believes what he believes. I believe a lot of the time differing, but there's a decorum that should be adhered to. So, Mr. Bosco, your brace is not a ghost gun, correct?
Oh, I think that was a fuck you.
Is this an insurrection? So will they be held to the same... I don't want another January 6th, do we?
Yeah. Pat will tell you when the gallows go up for you, buddy.
They're trying to overthrow the government. They ought to be held to the same standard, but I think they're trying to express their...
Whoa. Members out of line.
Point of order. The gentleman's time has expired.
Yeah, and here's a point of order. You weren't here to begin with. Ms. Jackson Lee went 4.5 minutes over. We said that I was going to take one additional minute, and Mr. Biggs was going to take one additional minute. She went over by 4.5 minutes. Mr. Bosco, you invented the pistol brace after witnessing a disabled combat veteran. Struggled to shoot while... Does the Capitol Police not do their jobs?
Oh, nice.
What the hell's going on? All right.
Yeah, just talk. Talk. That was Andy Biggs of Arizona.
This hearing's recessed.
The goose hates it when it gets the same sauce as the gander, doesn't it? Christopher, evil is evil. Please wisdom us, Pat the word-knowing man. God damn it, these idiots just keep getting dumber and dumber. As for the gun-toting bra-strapping lady, and Nancy Wilson wrote a song about her. Oh no, Christopher. Heartless. Heartless. Never, never out of control. Heartless. Heartless. You keep on sinning in the name of rock and roll. Sing along, everybody! But you're right, Christopher, they do keep getting dumber and dumber. Maybe a little oil, maybe a little anointing oil would grow them some extra brains. Stephen New York says, I'm all for scrapping decorum, mostly in the Congress. I think we should bring some raucousness vis-a-vis the House of Commons to Congress. And yes, I'm actually in favor of things more like what Marginal Trailer Queen and others did at the State of the Union. Well, the problem with that, Steve, is that we can't do anything in a measured fashion. We've been down that road. The House of Representatives was a bloody damn place. Dueling and knife fights and guns being drawn on the floor of the House. People being beaten within an inch of their lives by enslaver white men. I mean, it happened. But this hearing was well and truly off the rails. And it wouldn't, it only stands to reason that if it went off the rails somewhere along the way, Jim Jacket Off Jordan had to be near.
So much. Let the record reflect, I am a licensed gun owner and respect the rights of individuals afforded under the Second Amendment. However, we can preserve those rights while also implementing common sense gun safety measures, many of which are supported by our law enforcement to help them do their jobs and keep all of us safe. Despite this, we continue to hear talking points across the aisle against legitimate restrictions on firearms that would support the job of law enforcement and keep our children and community safe. In the 117th Congress, I was proud to support the bipartisan Safer Communities Act, which provided hundreds of millions of dollars to support common sense gun reform. In fact, Cleveland was already awarded $2 million from that fund to support city-led collaborative community violence prevention, intervention, and public engagement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand my time has expired, but I do want to say this. President Biden is taking action that is desperately needed and timely. And along with that, the congressional Democrats are ready and willing to continue our diligent work to save lives and keep our country and communities and children safe.
Chair recognizes Thank you,
Mr. That, by the way, was a badass woman by the name of Chantel Brown. She represents the 11th Congressional District of Ohio. She referenced Cleveland. She is from the greater Cleveland area. But now the circus is in town because Jim Jacket Off Jordan gets to talk.
Jordan. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wilcox, did you or anyone in your organization communicate with the ATF or the Biden administration about these issues we are discussing today prior to the notice of proposed rulemaking?
We submitted formal petitions for rulemaking through the appropriate channel, sir.
Before the notice of proposed rulemaking?
That's correct.
So you were in communication with the Biden administration wanting to make these changes?
We filed formal petitions for rulemaking through the appropriate channels.
Who'd you talk to?
It was a written submission, sir.
Did you speak to anyone?
Kind of a Dollar General Perry Mason, Jim Jacket Off Jordan. And once again, his jacket is off, nowhere to be seen, because, I don't know, his bulging wrestling muscles can't be confined within the strictures of a blazer.
Personally?
I didn't.
Did anyone in your organization talk to anyone?
I have to check, but I believe we submitted the written submission as a formal submission.
People in your organization may have talked to folks at the ATF prior to the notice of proposed rulemaking?
Not that I'm aware.
Did anyone in your organization talk to Mr. Dettelbach before the notice of proposed rulemaking?
I don't believe Mr. Dettelbach had
been nominated.
You came in afterward.
Have anyone talked to Mr. Dettelbach about this personally?
Of course, we've been in communication with the ATF in this administration and in prior administrations.
Talking to the director? You've talked to the director?
We work with ATF across administrations.
Have you talked to the director? It's a simple question.
Yeah, I've communicated with the director.
You've talked to Mr. Dettelbach?
Of course.
Yeah, and I find that interesting. I just know, as we're speaking upstairs, the president of the National School Board Association is sitting for a transcribed interview because the same thing happened there. National School Boards Association talked with the Biden White House, the Biden Justice Department, the Biden Department of Education, concocted this letter that set in motion this whole attack on parents showing up at school boards. And it looks to me like we have a similar operation going on here, where you guys worked with the ATF to change something that had been the law for 10 years to go after law-abiding Second Amendment Americans.
Second Amendment Americans. I didn't know there were such Americans. Well, then again, as a second-class American, maybe I shouldn't be surprised.
Second Amendment supporting Americans. Mr. Bosco, you invented this stabilizing brace, is that right?
That's correct.
And you invented it for a Marine buddy, a friend of yours who served our country and was injured?
That's correct.
And you were told 10 years ago that the stabilizing brace does not convert a pistol into a short-barreled rifle, is that right?
That is correct.
I got the letter right here from the ATF, November 26, 2012, right? And then 7 weeks ago...
Now, wait a minute. All this question about did you talk to the head of Jim Jacketoff Jordan? Did you talk to Wayne the Peter about all of this? Did you talk to Wayne the Peter? Oh, but we don't ask Jim Jacketoff Jordan those kinds of questions. Steve in New York. Jim Shorts, the bugger-in-chief, is describing exactly what normally happens when people lobby the government to make changes to rules and laws. Funny how that works. Yes. And Flavio observes, you look up weasel in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of Jim Jacketoff Jordan grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. Yes, you will. God, he's horrible.
180-degree change. Right? 180-degree change. Just the opposite. They now say it is just the opposite of what they told you 10 years ago. I know others have talked about this, but I think it's so clear. 180-degree change. So in 10 years and 2 months, the rule was one way, and you developed business based on the rule that they told you. Your government told you this was fine, and now they've changed it.
That's correct.
When did the bill pass that changed the law?
There was no bill.
No bill. That's the fundamental issue, right? No bill. Mr. Dettelbach, the new director, he never ran for Congress. I don't remember a bill going through Mr. Nadler's committee last Congress that changed the law. I would have known because I'm on that committee, the Judiciary Committee, which has jurisdiction over this stuff.
The Judiciary Committee? Is that some sort of regional dialect there in the Buckeye State?
In the full Congress. I don't remember a bill in the Senate Judiciary Committee passing or going through the Senate, and I certainly don't remember a bill going to President Biden's desk that he signed in the legislation that changed the rule. But this could potentially impact millions of Americans, law-abiding, Second Amendment-supporting Americans. Is that right, Mr. Bosco?
That's absolutely correct.
How many products have you sold, just your company alone, to Americans? How many stabilizing braces have you sold?
Many millions. I can say that from 2020 to today, which are the years that the ATF didn't concern itself with when it did its impact study, we sold our company alone 2.3 million braces.
So while they were doing their study, they didn't count the number of braces that were being sold?
They didn't count in their impact study.
That's probably because Mr. Wilcox's organization told them not to count it, right?
I don't want to...
Well, they were talking to him all the time, sounds like, putting this all together, going after people who support the Second Amendment. How many Americans do you think it's total? So I've heard estimates as many as 40 million Americans could be impacted by this.
Correct. Congressional Research Services has said anywhere between 10 and 40 million Americans own stabilizing braces.
Unless you remove the brace, lengthen the barrel, turn in or destroy your firearm or register your gun with this government that you know you can trust because Mr. Wilcox has been working with them. You know you can trust. Unless you do those four things, what happens? What are you?
A felon.
A felon for something 10 years ago they said was just fine, that you built a business on, and the business started because you wanted to help a man who put the uniform of his country on his back and served our country and was injured, and now they're going to put you out of business and make people felons. But don't worry, every town in the USA, Mr. Wilcox has been working with our government to implement this, to target Second Amendment people, Americans who support the Second Amendment. Such a deal. That's why we need legislation to say...
Lying sack of shit. Because you'll notice the important question never gets asked. How many of these braces have you sold? How many people have these braces? Between 10 and 40 million. How many weapons with stabilizing braces which makes for more accurate shooting and makes a potential mass murderer more effective, have been used in, well, mass murders. Somebody play the Jeopardy theme. But that question will never be asked. Probably because there is no answer. Because that's the kind of stuff that the God knows the maggot party doesn't want anyone to know. Remember, they threw a fit about bump stocks, too. Remember what the guy in Vegas used? Yeah? Semi-automatic assault rifle with a bump stock that effectively made it a machine gun? Yeah? I wonder if Jim Jacketoff Jordan understands that if somebody perpetrates a shooting with a firearm, with a bump stock or no, or I'm sorry, a stabilizing brace or no, I wonder if he understands that that fucker is a felon. Insofar as we're talking about Jim Jacketoff Jordan, I'm guessing the answer is not just no, but oh, hell no. It was a busy little day in the House. Over at the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee hearing, you might want to get either the hockey puck and the duct tape, or the rot gut tequila and the swirly straw for this one. Well, the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee hearing just happens to have its among its membership Clanny Oakley, the Clanny Granny, you know, the congresswoman who got pregnant out of wedlock and had to drop out of high school at 17 and didn't pass her GED until she tried and failed three times in her 30s. And now has a 17-year-old son who committed statutory rape with a 15-year-old girl and knocked her up. So over at the Water, Wildlife, and Fisheries Subcommittee, they were having a hearing, and Clanny Oakley wanted time to introduce her bill to remove the gray wolf from the endangered species list. I see gray wolf and I get a little triggered. I remember the degree of reverence for those magnificent predators that some of my friends in the upper Midwest have. And then I think about, and I know for a fact that somewhere back in the Horn Archives, there's a program where I had a bit of a hissy over a fundraising email that I got from one of the big greens. I don't know how, but eventually they stopped sending those to me. But the subject line on that particular fundraising email was, "Save the last gray wolf." And it, I think that particular hissy included things like, "Oh no, not White Fang, the last one." And it was only, and it only cost a donor $15 to save the last gray wolf. And in return for which they would send you a canvas messenger bag just like the one that John Muir carried into Hetch Hetchy in the heady days of the early American beginnings of conservationism. Only, you know, that particular canvas messenger bag was, unlike John Muir's, manufactured in some sweatshop in China by some 9-year-old trained to a table. Like I said, I got a little triggered. So whether it's the rock gut tequila and the swirly straw or the hockey puck and the duct tape, at a hearing about her bill to remove the gray wolf because she's convinced that it's, I don't know, it'll be the Colorado version of, the dingo got me baby in Australia. And maybe she's worried about the new little boobert coming along. Little rape baby that it is. I say it because I do not know their gender. Maybe it should be the little rape baby that they is. So Clanny Oakley was there to introduce her. Whew. Gray wolf, because see, if you take it off the extermination list, sportsmen in Colorado, sportsmen, can take their freedom protectors out, you know, maybe an AR-15, and use it to chew up gray wolves to wolf chutney. I almost don't want to click play on this. And here we go.
I now recognize Representative Boebert for 5 minutes.
That's 4 minutes and 59 seconds too long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate this time today.
Remember, gray wolf, okay? Gray wolf. This is important. Gray wolf. And Stephen New York says, save the last gray wolf. Oh, and fuck the endangered hillbilly. Exactly.
And thank you so much for everyone who's attending here and traveling so far to be here. I do want to say before my opening remarks, you know, since we're talking about the Endangered Species Act,
I can't hardly do this. Before her opening remarks, does she think that this means it's not part of her 5 minutes? The hockey puck is out of reach, y'all. And there is no rock gut tequila. Little Miss Odyssea is lashed to the mast again. With no beeswax to stop up her ears.
Just wondering if my colleagues on the other side would put babies on the endangered species list. These babies were born in Washington, D.C., full term.
Yeah, that's right. In a hearing on removing the gray wolf from the Endangered Species Act, Lauren Bobblehead Boebert, grandmother of a rape baby, brought pictures of dead fetuses to the hearing. Now, if this were a normal Congress, and I don't even know why I continue beyond that, if this were a normal Congress, the gentle lady would be declared out of order and told to put her fetus porn pictures away and save it for the subcommittee on fetus porn pictures.
I don't know, maybe that's a way we can save some children here in the United States. Mr. Chairman, I am appreciative of you holding this important hearing. For far too long, the Endangered Species Act has been weaponized by extremists.
That's their new word, y'all. Weaponized. Weaponization of the federal government. Weaponization of the gray wolf.
Extremist environmentalists to obstruct common sense multiple use activities that they...
And common sense gun laws for blowing away gray wolves. Wow.
I wish some limousine liberal would pump about $1 billion into that district in Colorado so that you couldn't go. It's like a meme I saw that's appropriate for a lot of rural America. Just one of those green highway signs that says, last dollar store for the next half mile. There should be billboards like that in her district in Colorado. Not directed at her, but directed at the voters. What the fuck is wrong with you? Are you really humans? Or are you all pod people from Norblap 9? Oh, but you know what? She will make so much money off of that. Friend, today I showed pictures of precious Washington, D.C. fetuses born alive. They're pictures of stillbirths. Those aren't aborted babies. There are no 9-month abortions of living babies in the United States. Which is par for the course because, she's a Christian. And therefore a liar. She's an evangelical and therefore a liar. She didn't just go and find those somewhere on the interweb tubes and print them out at taxpayer expense. There's every reason in the world to believe that they were sent to her from one of those grifty, tax-exempt lie factories of the pro-life movement. I hate to seem over the top or anything, but I swear she makes me think, our little experiment in self-governance has gone terribly, terribly wrong. Jesus criminy. And I could do this for the rest of the program, and pre-record the programs for while I'm gone. Not gonna do that. Gotta finish packing. It's nothing but this madness. A bill in Florida. That says that a fifth grade little girl who gets her period at 11 instead of 12 cannot raise her hand and say, teacher, may I please go to the restroom? My period started. That they can't talk about menstruation in any way, shape, form, or fashion in the state of Florida, which in turn has the intended effect of making young girls feel ashamed of the working of their bodies and builds a wall of silence around perfectly ordinary bodily functions. God damn. Sponsor of the legislation is a dude, of course it's a dude, named Representative Stan McClain. Ashley Gant, a Democrat, asked him, well, if a Does the bill mean that girls who get their periods before sixth grade can't discuss that in school?
Yep.
So if little girls experience their menstrual cycle in fifth grade or fourth grade, will that prohibit conversations from them since they're in the grade lower than sixth grade?
It would.
And then he went on and said,
well, I mean, that wasn't our intent. And we could amend it or something.
And then it passed right through the Florida House like shit through a goose with no amendments whatsoever. With 100% of the Republicans in the Florida House of Representatives voting in favor of it. And curious, but curiously, a little girl who gets her period at 9 is experiencing something called precocious puberty. And little girls are getting their periods earlier and earlier and earlier now. Well, it can be stopped with perfectly safe and effective drugs called puberty blockers, which are now will be illegal in the state of Florida. But, you know, not for little cis girls. This is all about legislating shame. Lauren Bobblehead Boebert should be absolutely awash in shame. For her failure to be a halfway decent parent to her sons and teach them not to rape little 15-year-olds. Now, I do not know the law of the state of Colorado, but I'm pretty damn sure Colorado has a statutory rape law. Now, in a place like West Virginia, statutory rape is when the victim is under 16 and the perpetrator is over 16 and more than 3 years older than the victim. It's kind of an out for the boy. I don't know what it's like in Colorado. Some jurisdictions don't have that three-year language, that out. Of course, then again, here in West Virginia, we passed a bill that says that little girls could be married off, usually to much older men, the age of 12. As Jill Filipovic pointed out in an op-ed, shame is a powerful tool. It demands silence and complicity. It creates the circumstances of abuse and ignorance to thrive. This is what is happening in Florida. A girl who cannot talk about her own body learns that her body is a shameful thing. A girl who is ashamed of her own body may be less likely to take good care of that body. And when that shame is around sexuality and reproduction, it means girls and boys and women and men who experience less of the pleasure, deep connection, and novelty our bodies can provide instead may find their relationship with sex and sexuality tied more closely to hurt, fear, and disgust. But of course, in Florida, Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis and his minions in his pet legislature want children to learn about sex the way they did. You know, out in the woods somewhere. As opposing counsel once told me, Robin, this ain't statutory. This ain't sexual abuse. It's just a couple of little boys in the woods banging dickheads together. Whew. I swear it's real. Steve in New York says, let me translate Boebert's babbling. Blah, 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 Endangered Species Act, blah, 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 Endangered Species Act, blah, 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 Endangered Species Act, blah, 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 Democrat Party, blah, blah. That's about it. Steve said, I don't think it's about shame. It's the complete infantilization of the entire state of Florida. that and imposing Christian Sharia. I think it can be all three things at the same time. Yeah. Good Lord, I've been on a filler lobster. Y'all, we have $75 to go to qualify for a $300 Have a Show on Me tripling challenge. $75 more, we get $300, and then we're down to $580 for our fundraising hole. I can't tell you how important that is. Now, we did not have a button for Thursday on the front porch. But if y'all want to get a front porch going, you are mightily welcome to jump in. I don't know if there's anybody in the room or not. We'll find out. I didn't mean to run off of it, but there were, God bless America, there was a, sometimes I can just feel the IQ points peeling away off my mind when I see these things. Let's see. Thank you, Clarence. Clarence serving as the Age of Consent Research Department, ad hoc, of course, in Colorado. The age of consent in Colorado is 17. Oh well, the out in Colorado is more than the 3 years in almost level west by coal man Chinyastan. Minors 14 and younger in Colorado may legally consent to sex with someone less than 4 years older. Or a 15- or 16-year-old may legally consent to sex with someone less than 10 years older. Well, maybe Bobblehead's boy has a loophole. Yay. Apparently Bobblehead didn't take it too well, though. When her son told her about it, she said, "You're going to make me a granny at 36. And he said, "Well, didn't you make your mama a granny at 36? "Well, that's true." And then the guy who made her make her mama a granny got busted for showing his dick to an underage girl in a bowling alley. Republican family values, y'all. Yeah. All right, let's check in. Let's check in with the Thursday on the side porch crowd. Hey, Sparky.
Hello.
How are you?
Just sitting here relaxing.
You said it was a beautiful day out there.
Yeah, it is. Raining, that makes it a beautiful day, and there's sun shining.
Well, not raining and
amazing
sunshine.
What vitamin D can do for you.
Oh, without a doubt. Vitamin D and, I don't know, maybe something from a little shop nearby?
Yeah.
With your vape?
Apple Crisp.
So does it really taste like Apple Crisp?
No, that's just the name.
Well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes, you know, I've tasted some of it. It's like, yeah, okay, I can see why they call that, you know, blueberry bubble gum or whatever.
Some of it's just by the colorization of it.
Well, that's how far out of the loop I am.
And then when you go to buy it, they have the best bud picture of the bunch. But when you get it, it doesn't look exactly like that.
I Oh, it sounds like an extra nice afternoon there.
Yeah, at least I'm not doing the chocolate edibles.
Strong, are they?
Oh, they're good. I don't know about the strength, but they make you feel good. So all the reason I do it for is because of repetitive stress injuries I suffer from.
Right. Neck, wrists, shoulders. Neck, wrists, shoulders, knees.
Knees. And all those. Feet.
Is all of that, Sparky,
you know what it's like to stand on concrete 8 hours a day?
Not exactly. But I can imagine it takes a toll.
Yeah, or standing on a ladder for 8 hours a day.
And is all of that part of your life as a union electrician, or is there some Air Force involvement too?
No, Air Force was different. But I did have 2 knee surgeries when I was in the Air Force that have affected me. I had a medial meniscectomy done.
I think I actually kind of know what that is.
Seems like once you have a surgery, you always remember the technical term for it.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way that once you've had 300,000 people in a 9-county area poisoned by a coal cleaning chemical, you kind of can't forget the name methyl cyclohexane methanol.
But the rest of us do.
You're not in those 9 counties.
I'm trying to think of what. We've got some terms out here that I can't think of any right now.
I remember learning about polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. That was another fun one we learned. Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got a little update on Pat Fallon, who was being such an asshole in the hearing room, saying, "Is this another insurrection? Will the Capitol Police not doing their job?" Well, it turned out that the man and his wife that were hauled out were actually the still grieving parents of a 17-year-old boy who was slaughtered at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland.
Yeah, it's amazing how many of those people turned into be activists.
Something like that'll do it. And so they've been grieving now for 5 years, and he attended he and his wife, Manuel Oliver, and his wife attended, and his wife was the first one to yell, and then they take them both out. Well, when they did, now these weren't people busting glass or tearing down barricades. They simply use their voices to manifest their grief. Well, once they were dragged out into the hall, Manuel Oliver was tackled by the Capitol Police, slammed, and you know, you're talking about standing on a concrete floor. I have walked these halls, and they're very, very hard. And this looks like might be Longworth House office building. Well, they slammed Manuel Oliver to the floor, forced his head onto the floor, his wife Patricia is screaming, "Let my husband go." And Florida State Representative Maxwell Alejandro Frost, one of the rare Democrats down in Florida who is not and is therefore not one of Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis's little pet legislators, he saw what was being done to Mr. Oliver. And he said, "Manny is a hero. He didn't deserve this. The Republican chair of this committee just called him a narcissist. Disgraceful." And what she said was, "You took my son away from me." And every one of those filthy Republicans did. By their silence and their craven obeisance to the NRA.
Yeah. I was at the recyclers the other day.
Yeah.
Cashing in aluminum cans. This old boy started up a conversation with me. We were standing in line waiting to get paid. Had an NRA hat on. I had to bite my tongue and not say anything about it.
Probably wise that you did, because those folks aren't sane.
I know. But he was asking me how would I smash the cans to get them so flat. And I was telling him about the tool I made out of an old weight set, the little things that used to screw on the bar.
Yeah.
Well, my dad had a old weight set because he was into Jack LaLanne workouts and everything way back in the 50s.
Right.
40s and 50s, I guess. But anyway, even when he was out of high school. But anyway, the thing was about, three inches wide. And I just put it on a piece of 3/4 inch rigid and it smashes cans. Flatter than a piece of paper almost.
Wow.
He was complaining about, he had one of those can smashers with the handle.
Yeah, we've got one of those.
I said, yeah. Those things don't last forever.
I find those things kind of satisfying, though. Smash the can, move along.
Then you really like my can smasher.
Well played, Jeremy. Jeremy said, you should have said to the old boy, you crush him against your forehead just like NRA members and Trump maggots.
Yeah, I just read that.
Come on, just a little cowbell from that one. That was
true. Okay, yeah, Jeremy, yeah. I think that's cowbell number 4.
You folks are lucky that you can take him in smashed. Here in Oregon, you got to take him in full round and all the rest of it, or they're not acceptable.
Wait, you can't even squeeze them to crush them?
Nope, they've got to be just as round as they were when you took them out of the store, because they run them through a machine that reads the barcode on them.
Yeah.
And so let's say you get an aluminum can that has 100% juice in it. 100% juice cans aren't part of the recycle bill. Only alcoholic beverages, sodas, that kind of stuff. Anyhow, when I first got up here, I was smashing the cans like I did down in California. You know, I had a 33-gallon garbage can full of cans, and I took them in to recycle. And they said, "Oh no, they got to be perfect. These are just, put them in the garbage." Bullshit on that. So my next trip down to California, I took all the cans from Oregon and took them down to California, where you only get 5 cents a can instead of 10 cents a can. But then every trip I was down in California, I'd buy beer in California and then bring it up here and drink it up here. And then I'd turn the cans in up here to where I only gave California 5 cents, but Oregon gave me 10 cents. And I know it was technically illegal, blah, 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 but I figured I about broke even. I didn't make any money doing it.
Hey, Roger, well, I learned something.
They don't count the cans. They just count by weight, whatever it weighs.
They don't. I know they do in California. They do it by weight, but up here they don't. They do it per can, and the barcode has to match a barcode that charged the deposit when that can was purchased.
Wow.
What was it?
Hey,
Christmas?
Roger, I learned something new at the bottle drop. If you have a plastic bottle that had milk or a milk-like substance in it, they won't accept that. Did you know that?
No, but I've never – milk just – there's no deposit on milk containers, but as far as
that
I know.
That might be why. Yeah, okay.
Anyhow, Robin, I got a question for you. We know about this indictment watch and blah, blah, blah. And I've been thinking about the two cases that are going on in New York. And the Stormy Daniels case, which is the district attorney, is revolving around the whether or not the money was paid and then written off as a business legal expense and potential fraudulent bookkeeping kind of stuff. And then there's the Attorney General's investigation that's looking into more of the whole way that they increased evaluations when they wanted to get a loan and depreciated evaluations when they wanted to pay taxes.
Yeah, that's the civil fraud suit.
Yeah. Now, I'm wondering if there isn't a cause for delay because these two cases are, in a sense, incredibly intertwined. And if the DA is seriously looking into, in essence, fraud that was committed by the company, which is what the district, what the Attorney General's also looking into, fraud committed by the company. Is there any potential for one of these cases to be prosecuting and then create a double jeopardy over the issues brought up?
The short answer is no.
Okay.
Double jeopardy applies primarily to criminal cases, and it's not double jeopardy as long as one crime contains an element that the other crime did not.
So they can be related. In other words, basically what we're looking at is fraud. And one of them sort of fraud against lending institutions, but also the tax. But the reason to declare it a legal expense was undoubtedly to get a tax break. So there, okay, there wouldn't be a double jeopardy because
no, and you know the purpose of the payoff was to hide the illicit activity, and it's the fact that apparently it came from something other than personal funds.
That was just a little thing I had.
For all of his barking and braying about how they can't charge me, it's impossible. John Edwards was charged for paying off his mistress. Remember John Edwards? I know, it seems like a million years ago.
Yeah. MSNBC, it was in Rachel's time slot, but not Rachel, did a number on that the other day on bringing up the various other people who have been elected individuals who have been charged, and John Edwards.
Well, isn't that part of what Denny Hastert went down for, too? Paying off the little boys that he fucked?
There have been so goddamn many of them, they're hard to keep track of over all these years.
He was caught doing the withdrawing $9,999, multiple, like 100 times or whatever to try to, and that perked up the ears of Homeland Security and I think SEC, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you're not supposed to do that. It's against the law. I think that's part of what he went to jail for.
But it did relate to the fact that he was fucking little boys on the wrestling team.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Christian values and all.
Mm-hmm. Sweaty Denny. At your service.
The sweaty wrestler. Hey, Bart Cop.
Then over in the regular chat, I posted a thing I found earlier today. I'll read it to you. I really don't like city parks. I want to join a country club so my kid doesn't have to play with those kids. And I want the city park system to pay my membership. School vouchers in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's basically school vouchers. Right. What do you want to bet Florida tax dollars go into vouchers for the Tallahassee Classical School?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, how much state funding does Hillsdale College get?
I don't know. In Michigan, I wonder.
In Florida.
Wait, Hillsdale College is in Michigan.
Well, I thought they were out of Florida, too.
Well, they own the charter. They own a network of charter schools.
Okay, my error, every once in a while on my Facebook feed, I get some questionnaire from them about.
I could be wrong. I mean, I need to take a look.
Arrange their curriculum to make America great again.
Oh, and I need to thank Steve in New York. Steve just took us down to $65 to go. We've got 52 minutes to come up with a minimum of $65. And then we'll qualify for the 3-for-1 challenge, and that will be humongously helpful because March is going to prove to be rough for bill paying because when I go away, no fundraising.
Now, I got another one for you on why people hate math.
Okay.
Historically, if one is to teach math, well, people who are math phobic frequently are teachers at the elementary level. And in second grade, they come up with worksheets like the terrible twos and the impossible sevens or whatever. And they have these dark memes about math. Matter of fact, I had one young lady one time try to get me to tutor her so she could pass the California Basic Educational Skills Test so she could get her credential because she kept flunking the math part of it, and that was the only thing stopping her from getting her credential. And I figured if somebody was that poor in math, they really shouldn't be teaching elementary kids anyhow. But when you moved up, in California at least, you needed to have an academic major in the field that you were teaching in, which meant English majors taught English, math majors taught math, and physical science teachers taught physical science. But back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, when I was doing my college work over a period of time, generally speaking, college professors had, in math, have this thing about mathematics is a science, and if you can't understand it, fuck you. And so the people that went through were only people that were really good at math. So you're really good at math. You get your math teacher credential, and you go teach in a public school. And the first thing they do when you're a new teacher is they put you to teaching remedial math, which are the people that have a hard time with math. And you've never had a hard time in math. You've never taken a class like what you're expected to teach. And so you go in and you have all these students. Let's take an Algebra 1 class, which truthfully is rather rudimentary when it gets to mathematics as opposed to arithmetic. But they walk in with an attitude of, how come you're so fucking stupid that you can't understand this? And they have absolutely no clue as to the difficulties that the students are having learning the subject because they never experienced the difficulty. Now, I got into teaching math in a slightly different way, and that was that when I went back to college to get my bachelor's, I knew I couldn't do it in math because I only had 2 years and I'd been out of it too long. And the reason I didn't get my math degree was because of the Vietnam War. And I was opposed to the war, and there was a calculus prof who was in favor of it. And because I was opposed to it, there was no way in hell I was ever going to pass the third semester of calculus. But California created a, I forget the name of it now, but there was a statewide exam. And if you had a bachelor's degree in any subject and could pass the statewide exam, it filled in as if you had a bachelor's degree in the subject so you could get your single subject credential. Well, I had failed Algebra 1 in high school, so I have kind of a feeling for the problems. And then I had this professor who was a real asshole. And I think that's one of the reasons that I was able to teach math to the kids I taught math to, is because I was always looking for another way to explain it to them and not try to treat them as you're just a dumbass because you can't figure this shit out. I don't know if that made a hell of a lot of sense.
No, it makes sense. I mean, I think I'm just plain old guilty because I loved math up until algebra. And I had a decidedly not dynamic Algebra 1 teacher. And my Algebra 2 teacher wasn't either, and neither was my geometry teacher. And, you know, my confession, being, as the saying from Caddyshack goes, stoned to the bejesus belt, in both Algebra 2 and so-called unified geometry, which was geometry, you know, geometry with some trig thrown in, that's on me. But I mean, basic functions, I love it. Do it all day, you know. Actually, algebra what? I'm getting ready to take a drive, and I'll run those stupid rate, time, and distance problems in my head the whole way. Just because I find it fun and it occupies my time and my mind. But there's no doubt that I don't know, maybe it's better taught now. But I did see that there's a move afoot to de-emphasize, and of course I never got there, there's a move afoot in academia now to de-emphasize calculus. Unless people really, really, really freaking need calculus. Because it's... Calculus always struck me as being the mathematical equivalent of something I mentioned the other night, namely the reading of James Joyce's Ulysses. Ask an English major. Yeah, I did. I don't know if I got it yet. But it was like a hazing ritual. And my buddy, the master's degree holder in chemical engineering, said, Calculus 1 and Calculus 2 is just hazing. You get through that, and then they teach you how to actually do it in Calc 3.
Well, there's a standing joke that you take arithmetic all the way through eighth grade, and you never really understand arithmetic until you take algebra. And then you kind of understand how the number system works. And then you really don't understand algebra until you take trigonometry. And then you go, oh, wow, that makes sense. But you really don't understand trigonometry until you take calculus. And then it really doesn't matter anymore because nobody ever understands calculus.
Precisely. It's Ulysses.
Well, I have to disagree with that.
Have you read Ulysses?
No, but I've understood.
Then don't disagree.
Calculus has to do with rates of change. Now, visualize, if you will, a 10-foot-tall ladder standing up against a wall that's more than 10 feet tall. Okay? Now, if I move the bottom of the ladder
out. I don't know if I'm going to play this game.
If I move the ladder out, the bottom of the ladder out 1 foot, does the top of the ladder go a long way down the wall or a short way down the wall? Remember, you got this 10-foot-tall ladder right up against the wall, and you move the bottom out 1 foot.
Yeah.
How far does the top go down?
That's
a lot or a little?
Yeah, but it's not gonna go down as much at the top as it goes out at the bottom.
Correct. It's a little bit, just yeah. A little bit, and it's going to be really slow. So if you move the bottom out a foot, that top doesn't move at the same speed as the bottom of the ladder moves at that speed. Okay. The bottom of the ladder moves out a foot. Top of the ladder only comes down maybe an inch, and not very fast. Now, take that ladder out to where it's like 9 foot 11 inches away from the wall. So it's going to be up a foot on the wall, basically. You move the bottom of that ladder out now just a little bit, and the top of the ladder moves a whole lot.
Makes sense.
Okay. Calculus is the study of wherever the base of that ladder is and how fast you're moving it to be able to relate to the very top of the ladder and how fast it's sliding down the wall and the rate of change the top of the ladder is moving when you deal with what you're doing with the bottom of the ladder. Okay? Now, that's a very simplified number that dealing with calculus. Another physical example of calculus is we'll take a reservoir behind a dam. Okay? Make it a nice, easy, classical one. You've got a single river canyon. It's V-shaped. Everything's nice and smooth. When a certain amount of water fills up that reservoir, 1 foot of depth, at the very beginning. Does it take a lot of water or a little bit of water when compared to how much water does it take to fill up the top foot of that reservoir?
Roger, my eyes are rolling back in my head.
No, it's a real simple one. You got this V-shaped canyon that you've put a dam in. Okay? You put the dam in. You put some water in to start, and it doesn't take very much water to fill up that first foot because across the reservoir is a pretty small area. You get up to the top of the reservoir, it's a long way across, and to fill up that last foot needs a lot more water than it does the first foot. Calculus, dealing with the reservoir and all the rest of that, will tell you how much water you need for the last foot, how much water you need for the first foot. And you need a hell of a lot more water for the last foot than you do the first foot. It's the same reservoir, but there's things that are changing all the time. And it's the study of those rates of change. Now, the old textbooks that were filled with these goddamn formulas you had to memorize inside the front cover and the back cover, and they wouldn't let you use your book to take a test. You had to memorize those fuckers. It was a terrible, terrible problem. But with today's electronics, hey, the people that make the programs are the ones that need to understand calculus. You just need to figure out how to put the numbers into the calculator.
You know, you just reminded me indirectly of something. Because Stephen New York mentioned the other night that we should have a reading from section one of William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, which is very much pretty closely contemporaneous with, say, Ulysses by James Joyce, and is every bit as stream of consciousness. Is somebody groaning? If you are, I understand. But the idea being that there's something about Trump that reminds people of Benji from The Sound and the Fury. And Benji, with no insult intended, is what was referred to at the time as an idiot. Scientifically referred to as an idiot. Winston Groom, in the text of Forrest Gump, makes reference to being an idiot. My name is Gump, Forrest Gump, and I am an idiot. Not one of them idiots like what plays with theyselves when they go to the bathroom in school. I am a certifiable idiot. Some words to that effect. And Gump is an idiot because he is an idiot savant. Because he made an A+ in advanced light and could not pass freshman comp. I love the idea that at one point in time there was a class in the physics department of the University of Alabama called advanced light. The Sound and the Fury begins on April the 7th, 1928. And, you know, I mentioned why I failed Algebra 2. This may have had that same factor may have had something to do with my struggles with The Sound and the Fury. But I eventually did sort that one out. April 7th, 1928.
Through the fence, between the curling flower spaces, I could see them hitting. They were coming toward where the flag was, and I went along the fence. Luster was hunting in the grass by the flower tree. They took the flag out, and they were hitting. Then they put the flag back, and they went to the table, and he hit, and the other hit. Then they went on, and I went along the fence. Luster came away from the flower tree, and we went along the fence, believe me, and they stopped, and we stopped, and I looked through the fence while Luster was hunting in the grass.
Yeah, Caddy.
He hit. They went away across the pasture. I held to the fence and watched them going away.
Listen to you now, Luster said. Ain't you something? 33 years old going on that way. After I done went all the way to town to buy you that cake. Hush up that moaning. Ain't you going to help me find that quarter so I can go to the show tonight?
They were hitting, little, across the pasture. I went along the fence to where the flag was. It flapped on the bright grass and the trees.
It's slow. Come on, change the page. Come on, Luster said. We done looked there. There ain't no more coming right now. Let's go down to the branch and find that quarter before their mothers finds it.
It was red, flapping on the pasture. There was a bird slanting and tilting on it. Luster threw. The flag flapped on the bright grass and the trees. I held to the fence.
Shut up that moaning, Luster said. I can't make them come if they ain't coming, can I? If you don't hush up, Mama ain't going to have no birthday for you. If you don't hush, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to eat that cake all up. Eat them candles, too. Eat all them 33 candles. Come on, let's go down to the branch. I got to find my quarter. Maybe we can find one of they balls. Here they is. way over yonder. See?
He came to the fence and pointed his arm.
See him? They ain't coming back here no more. Come on.
We went along the fence and came to the garden fence where our shadows were. My shadow was higher than Luster's on the fence. We came to the broken place and went through it.
And it only gets more confusing from there. I'm guessing from the noises I'm hearing that did I no? I thought I might have did I conjure Steve into the room? I'm hearing some kind of noise. Oh, and by the way, Randy Radar says, calculus, differentiation is just fancy division. Integration is just fancy multiplication. These are some interesting noises. Mystery guest, sign in, please.
When I checked, it was only you and the guest that had an open mic just a bit ago.
Yeah, that was not me making those noises. But thank you to David up in Oregon. David just got us down to $55 to go to meet the 3-for-1 challenge. And we got 33 minutes to make the other $55 up. Or not make it up, but round it up, I guess. Thank you, David. Thank you so much. I hope semester 2 of 1L is going swimmingly. I really was. I was kind of hoping Steve would still be listening because that was his particular request. And it really does make sense if you read the Benji parts as Nitwit Nero. Well, I don't. And I wonder, and I've since wondered because I've read the book many times. I've wondered, you know, Benji was billed as an idiot because that broad brush was used for all kinds of neuroatypicality or neurodivergence. And I'm wondering maybe if Benji was non-communicatively autistic. Because he's the scion, and see, this is how the nexus with Nitwit Nero works. He's the scion of a wealthy family, and he is coddled, but at the same time treated with extreme cruelty. And about the only people who treat him with decency are one family member and the black folks in the community there. They have mercy for Benji. Luster is a 14-year-old black boy who went to town to get Benji's birthday cake. Well, that was a conversation killer.
Well, no, and the other thing is, from reading that book, from what I recall, Benji is completely colorblind as well.
Yeah, yeah. Benji is incapable of the racism that otherwise suffuses the entire book.
Yes, exactly.
Nice observation. Thanks for jumping in and helping me out, Christopher.
Yeah, no problem.
Because I can nerd out on this shit. I can, I promise. For me, something like this is kind of a palate cleanser after Clanny Oakley and Jacket Off Jordan and
God. And Pat the word knowing man. What a fucking dumbass. Jesus Christ.
You know, there's something special. There's something special that happens, Christopher, when somebody with an upper Midwestern accent says, "What a fucking dumbass." It conveys a degree of dumbassery that is otherwise not conveyed by "What a dumbass." No. You say it and we understand what a dumbass the dumbass is.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
aim to please. We knew this. We've been talking about this. As soon as they won the House, it was just going to be 2 years of
madness.
Monkey poo flinging. That's all we got.
And I don't know. I don't know if we were harboring some sort of delusional hope, or, you know, the kind of magical thinking that will wind up getting you into a 12-step program. Yeah, because when you get to the magical thinking part, no, it's whatever it is you're doing, it's time to take 12 steps and quit it. And I have.
What do you always say about the cow staring at the new gate?
Yeah, like a cow, like a cow staring at a new gate.
Yeah. It's not going to stop being a.
But this is, but Christopher, this is where we are, and this Congress has been in power 3 months as of the first week of April.
Yeah, we got a long way to go.
I mean, this is.
But we're knee deep in campaign time.
Yeah, I know, but this is some serious Jed Clampett space, you know. One of these days, I got to have a long talk with that boy.
But now you have been examining their proposal on how to deal with inflation. And you have fully read their proposal on immigration.
I'd love to.
And you've fully read their energy independence bills and their climate weather.
Every last one of them, Roger.
I hope it took you longer than the 0 seconds it took me.
Right, because they don't freaking exist.
But they could still scream about it.
It's the Easter Bunny plan on immigration, the Easter Bunny plan on inflation, the Easter Bunny plan on climate change, because they're all imaginary.
Well, I'm still waiting for the replacement for Obamacare. I've been waiting 13 years for that one.
What? I've been waiting 13. Oh, Roger, it's the fact that you counted them.
No, it's the fact that I saw a post on Facebook today that today was the 13th anniversary of the signing of Obamacare.
Come on, Roger.
And aren't we still waiting for Infrastructure Week?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the wall. Don't forget the wall. Where the fuck is my check from the Mexicans?
Where's my Mexican money order?
Mexicans got my money.
It reminds me of Matt the other night. Bitch better have my money.
Where the fuck's my check, Donnie? It better be in Spanish.
Reminds me of the OJ trial. Where is it, Mr. Fung? Where is it? And now the memes are popping up with Trump leading all of those California police cruisers in a golf cart. But one of the funniest ones that I've seen lately.
I want to see him running away from the police down a ramp.
No, because the Prime Minister of England isn't there to hang on to.
I'm going to bust my ass. I knew it.
One of the funniest ones I've seen lately is the maggot who showed up in Manhattan to protest, here we go again, a drag show. And the drag queens beat the holy hell out of him. There's a picture of I don't know. It's internet true, okay? And he's, like, bloodied on his face, and he's like, well, I didn't come here for this. Really, Reichsmarshal the Habenfuhrer?
Play maggot games, win maggot prizes, fucker.
Ooh, wait, Robin, it gets better.
Oh, do tell, Jeremy.
There's a video clip from that incident because Keith played on his podcast, and it's based on the guy who's bloodied crying, I came here to help knock the shit out of me.
Who was he trying to help?
That's not the point. The point is he's complaining at the drag screen, kicked the shit out of him. That's the funny part.
Well, it is a confession, and it's not a point of pride in that among that set.
But Roger, to go back to what you were saying, the Republicans, all they've done in my entire lifetime is plant poison pills, you know, little time bomb legislation while they're in charge, so that it's timed perfectly to blow up when a Democrat, you know, president is in charge or Congress. And then they just point. See what they did? See what they did? That's all Republican rule's ever been since I've been alive.
Well, and I'm absolutely convinced that the Republican-biased Federal Reserve Board is continuing to work to create a recession by the mm-hmm. time of the 2024 election.
Yes, exactly.
There was absolutely no fucking reason to do this last 0.25% when they already know they've got banks struggling because of the increased interest rates. But now, when it comes to inflation, I've got a whole other one here. There is some inflation that's considered good. When we have inflation that truly affects the wealthy or the moneyed interests, such as the increase in the Dow Jones average, the increase in interest rates, which simply means that the money the banks already have in their account, they can now loan out at a higher rate, much higher rate than that which they are paying their depositors. That is good inflation. But when it comes down to the price of a gallon of milk or a pound of beef or a gallon of gas, this is labeled as bad inflation and stirred up particularly by the conservative media about how terrible it is. And yet it is the inflation for the good people that in essence cause the bad inflation. When the value of the stock goes up, it generally means that the dividends being paid out or the people with all the money are chasing too few goods. But every day, oh, the Dow Jones went up by 420 points today. Oh, the Dow Jones went up by 130 points today. How great it is for the economy. Oh, the Dow Jones went down by 500 points. That's terrible for the economy. What percentage of the fucking stock market is owned by 80% of the goddamn people? It's like 2%. It doesn't have any effect on the average Joe on the street. But that's looked upon as good inflation when it benefits the top 1%. But when the price of gas goes up, oh my God, let's have a fucking heart attack. And yet the oil stocks went through the roof.
Well, and there was once upon a time before 401ks came along the pike where pensions, when people had pensions, there was at least somewhat of a coupling between the stock market and Everyday Joe and Main Street. There was somewhat of a correlation between Wall Street and Main Street. But that all went away, disintegrated under Reagan. And when all the pensions were being dissolved and given away to the shareholders, and, oh, look, we got these brand new 401ks, and we're going to give you nice little tax breaks on these, and everybody shove all your retirement money in this vehicle, right? And there's the divergence there, right, between Wall Street and Main Street.
No, but that – I'm sorry. That has nothing to do with – I'm not a anti-pension or pro 401k person, but neither one has anything to do with each other.
Well, except for the fact that a lot of your union pension plans and even some of your state-run, like state teachers retirement plans and the rest of that, had a bunch of their money invested in the stock market, and part of the reasons they kept the donations into the pension plan theoretically somewhat low is because they were depending on an inflationary trend in the stock market in order to...
That's not inflation. That's price appreciation. That's different than inflation. Inflation is the general tendency over time for prices to increase. When you, there's various types of inflation. There is inflation that happens in the course of growth, you know, where you know, you have more people have money, more people are spending. The problem with inflation is when inflation outpaces increases in wages. That's the problem, which is that's what stagflation was in particular. In the 70s, where you had really high interest rates and really high inflation, which frankly is extremely counterintuitive if you understand how both of them work, but it happens. Deflation is pretty much bad in every single instance, because what it means is the money supply is contracting. There is less money floating around, and when there's less money floating around, ultimately it means I mean, the people that's going to affect the most are the people who don't have much of it. And the other thing, too, about inflation, one of the good things about inflation is it makes debt cheaper. Because when you take debt, you borrow at a certain interest rate. And when inflation goes up, you have more money. But the interest rate doesn't go up because the interest rates are not typically tied to inflation.
Well, except the caveat there is, let's say you buy a house at a year ago, approximately. A home mortgage was running around 3.5%, 4%. Today, that you got the money, you bought the house, which means you gave the money to the previous owner of the house. You're in great shape with inflation because you have a locked-in low interest rate, but that is only good in so much as if your wages go up to make that loan easier to pay off. If your wages have not gone up under that inflationary spiral you are now in, less of your money is available to pay your mortgage because more of that money has to be spent in buying your groceries that you need for everyday life.
What I'm saying is relative. Everything is, that's the thing about economics is the same thing about physics, which I love physics. I actually love calculus. I found it very easy. But it's all relative. With inflation, your loan debt service is relatively cheaper than it is without inflation.
But only if you have more money to deal with.
Roger, that's not. I said relatively. I'm not talking in absolute terms. It's relatively cheaper. It's cheaper this year than it was last year. Now, it may be that your wages didn't go up sufficiently with inflation such that a higher percentage of your income is going to things we'll call them necessities, food, child care, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't erase the fact that relatively speaking, the debt is cheaper. You have to always, in economics, you have to generally look at it in relative terms. Because, okay, frankly, there's,
you know,
no such thing.
I'm sorry. I'm gonna interrupt here because this is that classic old joke about the civil engineer, the mechanical engineer, and the economist trapped on a desert island. And they've got, from the shipwreck, they've got lots and lots of canned foods. So the mechanical engineer starts out, and he goes and gathers all the stuff to build a fire.
I know where this is going.
And he puts the cans in the fire, and the cans explode, so nobody eats. The civil engineer then builds this humongous Rube Goldberg device that causes that causes the can to open. But again, there's a terrible mess, and there's no way to eat the food. So then it's the economist's turn, and they said, "Well, what's your plan?" And he said, "Assume a can opener."
Yeah, I had an economist tell me that joke.
Oh, it's the oldest economist joke in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like the one lonely biblical textual criticism joke in the world. There's one. I mean, one. And I actually got to tell it to a biblical textual critic of profound talent and knowledge and intellect on this program a million years ago. Bart Ehrman. And I told it to him, and he absolutely loved it. Wrote back later and said, "Could you type that out for me? I know several people who need to hear this." It's about the old abbot and the young novice who's getting to copy his first text in the monastery. And then the abbot's looking over his shoulder and says, no, I think you've got that wrong." And no, I'm pretty sure I got it right. So, okay, come on. And they go down deep down into the dungeon, and they go to the oldest text they have, and they're flipping through it, and the old priest is looking at the Latin, and he begins to weep piteously because he's old. And the novice says, Father, what is it?" And he looks up with the tears streaming down his face, and he says, "It says celebrate."
Does everyone get that?
I hope. This is a highly intelligent audience.
Oh, my God. That is laugh out loud funny.
That's the only good... That's the one great biblical textual criticism joke. Because there are just some there are some professions and avocations out there that just don't lend themselves to a lot of humor.
Yes, and economics is one of those.
And I've always thought that Umberto Eco probably heard that joke somewhere along the way, and that's why he wrote The Name of the Roads. No spoilers. We have a news story. We're running out of time. 11 minutes, $55. An entire Have a Show on Me would be a big damn deal if we can do $55 in 11 minutes. We're off to Leon County, Texas. Leon County, Texas is southeast. I'd say it's east-southeast of Waco. You know, Nitwit Nero will be there on Saturday. Because that's the anniversary of the Branch Davidian disaster. Norman G, Texas is about, it's another couple of inches south-southwest of Palestine, Texas. And there in Norman G, Texas, that's N-O-R-M-A-N-G-E-E, the population 495 as of 2020. There resided a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republican by the name of Gary Buckalew. And I would have been okay with that if it had been B-U-C-K-L-E-W. But no, it's Gary, B-U-C-K-A-L-O-O, Buckalew. Hey, little Buckalew. Gary Buckalew was a teacher. In fact, in the Buffalo Independent School District, he was a life skills teacher. But he was also a youth pastor at the First Baptist Church of Norman G. Because they got him one. That was until That was until folks found out that Gary Buckaloo, life skills teacher and youth pastor, had engaged in what they charge in Texas as one count of sexual abuse of a child continuous victim under 18. I'm sorry, 14. Victim under 14, which is a first-degree felony. And indecency with a child sexual contact, second-degree felony. This good Baptist. And I'm trying to find a disposition. At one point, he was being held on a $100,000 bond. The funny thing is, I went looking for Texas youth pastor charged with child sexual abuse, and I found Gary Buckaloo. Now I got a totally different one. A grand jury has indicted a Texas youth pastor, James Needham, age 28, in San Angelo, Texas, on charges of possession of child sexual abuse materials. I suppose I shouldn't have to say this, but I will, just because, remember, this is the first draft of history here, and we're making a record, and there's going to be an archive, and you're 20 years long now. Neither James Needham nor Gary Buckaloo are drag queens. And they don't appear to be trans. In fact, they appear to be cis-normative, heteronormative, Christian white men. And there's still no real concern about that. And neither of these men will be mentioned, say, on any broadcasts hosted by Matt Walsh or neo-maxi-zoom dweeby Ben My Dry Wife Shapiro or Michael Knowles.
Testy Toaster won't.
Testicle Toasting Tucky O'Rose Carlson will not mention these stories.
No.
Neither, like I said, will Michael Knowles. Candy O won't talk about it. Frau Ingram won't talk about it. The Hannity job won't talk about it.
What about Shower with Crowder?
Shower with Crowder won't talk about it. Glenn, does anybody even watch him anymore? The Beckerhead won't talk about it.
God damn, he's still around.
Michael Savage.
They're getting a Savage Wiener spot.
The Savage Wiener won't talk about it. It's amazing the number of people who will not talk about this. Jeremy, thank you so very much. Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you to Karen. The challenge has been met. And in actuality, we are down to about $500 to go. That means all of today and $200 of yesterday, and we'd be done with fundraising until I get back on the last day of March. Thank you so much for meeting the 2-for-1, actually 3-for-1 challenge. So with what you just did, we get an entire show funded because y'all kicked in $150. Thank you all so much. Okay, we're into the academic jokes now. Randy Radar says, a mathematician, a scientist, and an accountant are asked, what is 1 plus 1? The mathematician says, it's 2. The scientist says, it's about 2.0. The accountant says, what do you want it to be? Oh, bean counter joke. What do you want it to be? How many psychologists does it take to change the light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb has to really want to change. How many trans girls does it take to change a light bulb? None. Just tell her she's beautiful and she'll light up the room all by herself. That's my favorite trans joke. Ralphs, thank you so much. We are down to 475. So that's amazing. We're $175 away from being fully funded for like yesterday. Y'all, it takes a great weight off my mind when I'm going down the road. Now this is not Grateful Dead going down the road feeling bad or anything. This is just going up the road.
Hey, did I tell you I'm planning? I know everyone's going to think I'm really a weirdo.
We got over that a long time ago, Steve.
I'm planning a trip. Yeah, I'm planning a trip. I'm starting to plan a trip to London for May 6th.
That's soon.
Well, you know what May 6th is.
Oh, it's the coronation of Chuck.
Yep, Chuck's coronation.
Oh, it is?
Mm-hmm. Are you really?
Yeah. And, you know, it's not like... You know, you have your Roman your Roman history and Roman Empire stuff and
yes.
Excuse me.
Sorry, I mean, you just couldn't catch me dead in that mob.
Oh yeah, I get you, but I just have this thing about. I really wanted to go get there before Liz died, just to say, because it was historic, and I just. You know, I don't know where I got this super appreciation for things that are once in a lifetime or historical things or, you know, I was there type events. You know what? I think I know it came from. I remember the first time I visited Gettysburg. And if you remember, Robin, there is a cow pasture there called Devil's Den. And there were some battles that took place.
Huge freaking boulders.
Yeah, big boulders. And I remember going through there and then seeing photographs that were taken.
Yeah, the Brady type photos.
Yeah, and there was the fucking, and I think it's not, I think I recognize a couple of the boulders, like, oh my God, I was standing right there. And stuff like that, I just...
Yeah, I mean, that's why Lincoln described it as hallowed ground, you know?
Yeah.
And the repeating rifle had just been introduced, and the traders complained about how it was unfair that them damn Yankees had them rifles that you could load on Sunday and shoot all week.
They were whining even then.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay, we've started something. John with a note. Oh dear. What did the dyslexic agnostic insomniac do at night? That's dyslexic agnostic insomniac.
Mm-hmm.
Lay awake in bed wondering if dog is real.
I can understand wanting to go to the coronation. I happened to get lucky and was there when Princess Margaret got married.
Oh, wow.
And was a Boy Scout, and one of our jobs was to sell the sixpence programs, and I was right in front of Buckingham Palace, and so I got to see him come out on the balcony and all the fancy carriages going by and all the rest of it. Hell, there hasn't been a coronation since 1953.
Yep.
Yeah.
And in fact, my great uncle and great aunt on my mother's side were there for that. Because my sister was telling me not long back that she, as a little girl, had souvenirs that they brought back to her.
See, that's exactly right there is why I like that stuff. It just, I don't know if I ever told you, I actually found a Canadian penny, God damn it if I didn't lose it. From the era of King George V, which was Elizabeth's grandfather.
Wow. That was when a penny was worth something.
Yeah.
And I just throw those motherfuckers in the fountain.
Right. No, but I hold stuff like that in my hand and think, God, who...
Oh, no, I'm that way. I'm absolutely that way.
How many people have held this, or... How many people stood here and you know, in this... If you think time, or, you know... The Earth is, 4.5 to 5 billion years old?
Mm-hmm.
So the notion that all that separates, and in that Devil's Den example, the only thing that separates me and the people who were there is 150 years.
Yeah.
And in the span of time, it's almost like it's an accident that I wasn't there, or they're not here.
Oh, the same, the same thing happened to me wandering around the Roman Forum. And,
yeah.
And even, you know, I have no claim to it. I have no heritage with it. But I remember the blazing hot summer Southwest Tennessee day when my Marshall Town trowel in the summer of 1983 hit something and went clink. On an archaeological dig.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 2,000-year-old human bone.
Whoa.
And it will... What? It will do things to you. I've got a friend, well, used to, paid him well, whose goal is, and he's roughly my age, and his goal is to be, is to live to the 14th day of October of 2066. And be,
I know what that is.
And be, and is. Be in England for it.
Yeah, isn't that 1066, the...
Battle of Hastings.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
1,000 years of well, nominally English rule. And he said, I'd love to be there and just look generally toward Germany and say... Fuck you and your 1,000-year Reich, Adolf. This is the real deal here.
That's great. Give a cowbell for that. That's great.
That's cowbell worthy.
I like to.
Hey, and Steve, when you're there, make sure on Sunday you head over to Chelsea and find yourself a solid Sunday roast. You do eat meat, right?
Yeah.
Okay, no vegetarian, no vegan. Good. They do have a vegan – well, they have at least a vegetarian roast. That's – my friends had that because they're pescatarians. But get the lamb. Oh, my God.
It's like
and by the way, Kenda in Missouri responded to Steve's – or Scott's effusive praise of Springfield cashew chicken. And she said it is everything that Scott said it was, and that it is something, if you get anywhere near Springfield, Missouri, and you do not have Springfield cashew chicken, you have cheated yourself of something precious in life.
I like to think of things more in more recent memory, like, what was it, two winter solstices ago where the planets aligned straight out in the sky, if you could see them. That
yeah.
Hadn't happened in 7,000 years. The pyramids weren't built the last time that happened. And then something like...
Oh, you haven't watched Graham Hancock. It had to. It happened 11,000 years ago. Everything happened 11,000 years ago. Just ask Graham Hancock. He told Joe Rogan all about it.
And then something like this green comet we had this past winter. That probably, last time came around, we were still in caves just discovering fire. At best.
And the next time it comes around, this planet will be ruled by a race of 6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches who worship us as gods. Because we wrecked the planet nice enough for cockroaches to evolve to be 6 feet tall and sentient.
And if you really want to get deep, the last time this planet was in this space in the universe, the dinosaurs ruled this planet.
Yeah, but do we ever really occupy the same space?
No, you're a time traveler. You're literally traveling through time.
Yeah.
Every second, you're never on the same.
Little blue green marble time machine hurtling in a helical fashion through the universe.
By the way,
hey, Robin, don't worry about
those sentient
cockroaches. They'll hate calculus as much as humans do.
I have no doubt. Motherfuckers, we should. Yeah. Wait. No, we got it. Hold on. We got to do another one. Actually, two more. John's on a roll. Let's just do the cowbell now. How do you get two old ladies to yell the F word at the same time? Get a third one to yell bingo.
Oh, that's great.
That
I love
is
that.
Great. That's a good one.
And this one may be even better. How many country singers does it take to change a light bulb? Two. One changes the light bulb while the other sings about how much they miss the old one.
That's good.
I'm loving that.
Steve, what was your question?
You said there you had friends who were pescatarians?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I mean, I appreciate that, but you probably should know that I actually still am Catholic.
Oh, okay.
Do not give a cowbell for that. That is completely gunner worthy.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
But you can't. You can't have you can have fish tomorrow, or you have to have fish tomorrow. Is that right?
I don't practice anymore.
Right.
Well, you know about the Roman Catholic priest who during Lent would not eat meat, but on Friday he had none.
Yes, I've heard that one. That's an oldie.
Yeah. I mean, they're all just rattling around up here. It's pathetic.
Actually, I picked up a fistful of dirt and it said back to me, "Fuck, man, you are really old." Never mind. That went down like a dud.
Yeah, that wasn't your best work, Christopher.
No, that was the workshop. That one needs some workshopping.
Hey, Robin, I emailed you the other night about the pi r squared thing.
Hey, cornbread r squared, pi r round.
Pi r round, cornbread r squared. Yeah.
That's a very old one too. Had to blow
some hillbilly math.
Had to blow the dust off the brain cell that one was on.
Okay.
Cletus, could you teach me math?
You people. And I tell you, and talk about places to. I would love to be, within reason. I think it would be 2029, the night that Tenochtitlan fell, and the Spanish barbarians so loaded themselves up with gold that when they began to be pursued out of town by the along the causeways on Lake Texcoco, they were it was said that the Spanish suffered a disease of the heart that could only be cured by gold. That disease is, of course, greed, avarice. But the strata and the geology of that area, the Valley of Mexico, when earthquakes come, they are so bad because the entirety of Mexico City sits on a bowl of pudding, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
And a great deal of the vast treasure that was the ancient Mexica was carried away by those fleeing troops, and they were so greedy that they carried more than they could escape with, and some fell over the causeway into the lake, and others just dumped the gold into the lake, and it's still there. I mean, a treasure trove of gold that no sunken Spanish galleon could begin to approach. And, of course, all that remains of Lake Texcoco is little tiny bits like down in the floating flower gardens, the Chinampas.
Can you pronounce that again, Robin? And what's the correct pronunciation of Yucatan? Is it Yucatan or is it?
It's whatever the Spanish say it is, because they stole it from the Mayan language, or possibly from Nahuatl. That's like Guatemala was Catemalan. I mean,
okay.
It's because avocados or ahuacat. It's literally a Hispanicization of an Nahuatl word. The great, the wonderful, wonderful Mexican dish mole that's made with like ground up chocolate and usually is with turkey. So good. And chilies. Mole is simply the Nahuatl word that means mixture. And that's why a mixture of aguacat is aguacamole. Avocado mixture. And the Spaniards really couldn't wrap their heads around the local languages. And so you get a place called Cuernavaca, which, you know, naming a place Cowhorn sounds pretty stupid. But it was actually a Nahuatl word that they completely were at sea with. And I never know what to do with that TL. I want to pronounce the L, but I know it's like a glottal stop or something. Jude wanted to know.
I think the indigenous tribes, I just wanted to throw this out there. The indigenous tribes' word for, at least of the U.S. and Canada, the indigenous tribes called the invaders the murderous, genocidal invaders from, you know, across the Atlantic. Their word for us was a wetico, the madness, insanity, greed that we experienced, or our ancestors. Their word for it was wetico, I believe.
Never heard that one.
Yeah, I think so.
Jude wants to know who was I referring to about the Springfield cashew chicken. That's our friend Kenda. And she writes from time to time. It wasn't an email. That was just Kenda responding to me on Facebook. Jude said she hadn't heard Kenda's name before. So good to know and comforting to know that she listens. Oh, Kenda. Kenda is there with every podcast. Hi, Kenda. John. What did the Buddhist say to... Oh, I know this one. I wonder how many others do. What did the Buddhist say to the hot dog vendor? Anybody?
Mm-mm.
Make me one with everything.
Ha, nice.
The vendor, the hot dog vendor makes the hot dog, and the Buddhist hands him a $20 bill. The vendor puts it in the drawer, and the Buddhist asks, "Where's my change?" The vendor replies, "Your change comes from within." I love that. It's usually a Dalai Lama joke. Of course, the Dalai Lama would not eat a hot dog, but it doesn't make it any less funny. Y'all, I got to pack. Finish packing. It's ever so complicated. But we got a little bit of a busy little first hour and 40 minutes of the program, and then got a little... Steve, are you still there? I got to know. I got a question.
Me?
Yes, you.
I'm still here.
Did you at least get to hear Benji read in the voice of Nitwit Nero?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, no, I was listening.
Okay, good. Because your suggestion.
And I'm going to tell you something, and I know this is exactly your point. I could totally imagine him just rambling like that, and then at the end of it, I could totally imagine all the Trumpansies just cheering like crazy while in the back of their minds going,
What the fuck
did he just say? But could anyone seriously say you couldn't hear that?
Emery, he has got to be a genius because nobody could say anything like that that wasn't no genius. You know, sitting there in their matching Barca loungers at the Ballerina Swan Lake Country Club and Trailer Court. Ralph says, "Have a great trip." Thank you, Ralph. Thank you so much.
Have a safe trip.
As long as Enterprise Rent-A-Car actually has a car for me to rent at like 8 o'clock in the morning, everything will be fine as frog's hair split four ways. But I got to
– And Robin, as long as a suspiciously large woman could fit in it as well.
She said – well, that was at the end. She said, well, we'll have something for you. And I'm like, I swear to God, if you put me in a we drove a little subcompact Nissan all the way from here to the Alabama Gulf Coast in 2017.
I remember that story.
And Annette and I felt like we had been beat on.
Do you ever remember the Seinfeld skit about the rental car?
No.
If you want to go watch it, I would do it after you go tomorrow because I don't want to put that karma out to the universe. But watch it after you go to the thing tomorrow.
Okay.
Promise me you're not going to. Yes.
I will not. I will not. I will not.
Good.
But I'm terribly excited for all of this. I think, you know. It should. I've sent out a ton of meeting requests, and Lord, I hope I get some back.
I wish I could get down there. I just don't. I just don't have the opportunity.
Do you have a Democratic Congress critter?
Me?
Yes.
Of course.
Who?
Meeks, Gregory Meeks. I mean, what stinks about a lot of the ones in New York is that you don't ever hear anything from them because they don't have they're not particularly vociferous people. They don't have to run, and they just occupy a
well
seat.
But if you send off an email saying a dear friend of mine is going to be in DC okay. on the 28th, 29th, and 30th, would you please meet with her? Her name is she'll
yep,
be
wanting
to
that.
Yeah
I'll do that.
You know, or maybe write through the local office and ask them to forward it to D.C.
Okay.
And the same goes for everybody else. If you've got a Democratic Congress critter, write to them and say, I would love for you to meet with my dear friend, Robin Kincaid.
Well, I'll do that.
Who is an original co-founder of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign regarding the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
I used to have AOC as my congressperson.
Well, Tara has her, so if you go with Meeks and she goes with AOC, I'm hoping we might have some luck. And AOC was a co-sponsor.
Oh yeah, she got on
a couple of congresses back.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know, I'll be talking about it at Princeton, the bill, and hopefully. Maybe some of the people who come to see it will write their Democratic New Jersey Congress people. And we'll get some, you know, because I would love to, the bill's going to drop. I would love to see it drop with 100 names on it. Wouldn't that be fantastic?
Oh, that would be great. Great, great, great.
And
Michigan State and Kansas State are really close right now. Sorry.
Should it be that close?
No, well, it's 75-70. I don't think so. I mean, Kansas State is third, is a three seed, and State seven.
Yeah, there can be upsets there. You know, my poor Mountaineers. When you get stuck in the 8-9 bracket or 8-9 spots, and we lost a heartbreaker to Maryland.
Yeah, that was a tough one. That was a great game.
Oh, it was. I mean, the Mountaineers acquitted themselves quite well, I thought.
This has been I just loved it, March Madness, because the upsets are just, and this year they've been really a flowing.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Second time a 16 seed took down a 1 seed.
Mm-hmm.
Same team, Virginia, right?
No.
No.
It was.
Oh, wait,
it
no,
was,
what? No?
It, no, was it was Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue. The other time was University of Maryland, Baltimore County beat Virginia the last time.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Okay. But Virginia got beat. But that was a two.
They were a two seed. Yeah.
Yeah. They got Princeton. Yeah, okay. Was it Princeton who beat them?
Is it? Yes. Princeton will sneak up on your ass.
Yes, they will. They still got the ghost of Kirill as an assistant coach. I swear to God, he's at the end of that bench.
Preaching that give and go.
Hell yeah. That's what basketball was basketball.
Is Bama still in it?
Yes, they're number one seed.
Yep. Oh, I know they were the number one, number one. Duke lost. That's always a happy thing for me.
I know, me too.
Little, you know. Of course, little ferret face.
It was nice to see Purdue
ferret
go
face
down.
Isn't there anymore.
It was Frank nice Burns? To see Indiana go down.
Frank Burns was the coach?
I think Krzyzewski was Frank Burns' bastard child. Little rat face.
The Illini always shit the bed in the tournament. That was no surprise.
Yeah, that's carved in stone, isn't it?
Yes. Northwestern won their first game. I was hoping, but no, they got pantsed pretty good in the second game, I think.
Got pantsed. It's good. Will says, do you plan to see Brad Sherman, Democrat of California? Will, if you will write a letter, I will too. So, I need to talk to. We've got a list of people who were on the bill before who are still in Congress, and we need to just kind of remind all of them. And I'll take as many as I possibly can. You fill the schedule up. You figure out who's in which building, and sometimes you kind of hustle from one meeting to another. That's what makes it better when you've got two people up there, because if you've got to have somebody cover. Yeah. Will, I'm Chicago. You're still listed as Will in Chicago. You're not Will in Chicago anymore. But I know changing a Skype or Gmail name is. It's easier to change a birth certificate in Alabama. I'm in D.C. the 28th, 29th, and the 30th. If the 30th gets loaded up, I will come home on the 31st.
It's easier than changing a gorilla's diaper, right?
Harder. At any rate, I got to get out of here. I'm going to miss y'all. I'm going to miss the whole Horn Family Community Congregation, because it's not often that I'm gone for an entire week. Thank you, everybody. Thanks to everybody who helped meet the challenge this evening. Thank you so very much indeed. We will, I'm back on March 30th or 31st. The fundraising goal will be $775 in the hole. But we knocked out a lot of that hole this evening, and I thank you so much, so much. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this little long-running conversation. By the way, the back porch will continue after this broadcast is over. And there will be a back porch tomorrow beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Roger and Steve. Soup! I do that when he's not here. That way I can, because he always gets it to me. He gets me with it first. Soup! Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Remember, like and subscribe, please. You'd be surprised what a difference it makes. I really didn't think it would, but Brother Deacon Asa convinced me, and there's more people listening now. And it's awesome. Welcome, new listeners. Welcome. As long as you're not right-wingers or maggots. But, you know, in a way, you're welcome, too. You might actually learn something. Leave a comment. Press that like button on TuneIn Radio. We will hopefully get to 1,000 discreet listeners over there. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. A proud union shop. Soon, for the 11th year, seeing the introduction of the only bill, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, that has ever offered the prospect of bringing relief to the agony of Appalachia with the banning of mountaintop removal. Please stay safe. Get your booster, get your flu shot, wipe down your surfaces, help stop the spread of RSV. Wear your masks. I got mine. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. I got mine. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And, of course, if somebody comes down the sidewalk to you saying, wonder if we could make fetuses in an endangered species, avoid Clanny Oakley like the plague, because she is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. It's a day early, but have a great weekend, everybody. Later.